Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Political Viewpoint. I'm your host, Penny Gaylor, and today's guest is the Mayor, Janet Holborough. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Penny.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, really good.
It's great. Hey, so what's been happening in your role as Mayor and what's happening out there in our Kapiti Coast? We regularly hear from Bernie, who's Mayor of Horowhenua, which is always a delight.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
As mayors, kind of talk a lot about things?
Yeah, we catch up regularly, and then in between we're in regular communication, you know, picking each other's brains, finding out how they do things, how we do things.
That sounding board.
Yeah, and the two chief executives have a really strong relationship too, Monique and Darren. They catch up regularly as well. Because we've got a lot in common, a lot of common challenges. So we work with Horowhenua on quite a lot of joint procurement, economic development things. There's quite a bit that we do kind of try and work together.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Well, that is good to hear because, you know, often we'll always hear about things where there are gaps and people aren't working together, but you are working together. That's great. Yeah. So what are things been up? I hear, you know, Somerset Retirement Village, that's kind of opened and running. And what, where have you been up there recently?
I managed to pop up there for the opening of their recreation centre, which is absolutely incredible facility. Right. So they've been operating out of a giant marquee ever since the first residents started moving in. Some of them said they missed the tent because it was really nice.
Yeah. But, did they take it down? Because we were up there last year for something, weren't we?
I think the tent is gone, Penny.
Because, you know, it doesn't everybody love playing in the tent?
It's also not what it is. It's who's there. And Anita Decker does such a brilliant job organising activities and different things for people to do. And it's just really, really amazing up there. But they've got now a cafe, a bar, they've got a little bowling green, all sorts of just incredible facilities for people to use. And the cafe's open to the public, I think.
Well, I might have to really pop up there, I reckon. Always like to check out what, you know, lovely cakes people are making. They got yummy stuff.
It's a fully catered professional kitchen.
Ooh, yum, yum.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful facility, and it's great to get up there and chat to people because quite a lot of them have moved from Wellington and they don't know what's going on in the district. They really want to get involved. So our older persons advisory group is going to go up and have a chat with them. One of the residents up there is actually on our older persons advisory group.
Excellent.
So that's a nice little connection. But they're really keen to, you know, start talking about what the advisory group's talking about, which is how we get around, how to make sure people are connected, how to address any challenges with technology that people might have. There's a whole program of work that's happening, so really good to connect people who are moving into the district into what we're doing for older people in the district.
So if they've recently got there, they might not have known about the Kite Festival, for example, that happened recently.
Yeah, there's so much going on. But for events, the Older Persons Advisory Group are planning some kind of festival later in the year. I don't know if people remember, they used to have an Older Persons Expo, and that's being revived, so that's really exciting. There's also a Disability Expo happening towards the end of the year as well. Whether those two things will tie together and become one, or whether they'll be two separate events, yet to be seen, but some exciting things coming up later in the year. But I'll go back to Kite Festival, which you mentioned. Absolutely wonderful event that happens every year, supported by our major events fund, an incredible group of volunteers. I saw Giorgio up there, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Helping with the traffic management.
Good boy, good boy. That's my son, folks.
But, again, lots of visitors. I went there at the end of the last day because it had been a really busy weekend for me and I was trying to make it up there because I try and go every year. And I managed to make it about an hour before the end, but I ended up spending a couple of hours up there because it was such a nice day that they didn't pull the kites down. They just left them up. And I had a chance to talk to one of the pilots and he said it was one of the last events that they hold for the season, for the kite flying season. A lot of them travel around and the same people attend a number of events around the country. And he said that Ōtaki was the best run event that they go to.
Good man.
Yeah, well done to Kirsty Doyle and the team.
Well, it was quite the weekend in Ōtaki. As a resident of Ōtaki, I know that there were I was actually at a big golf fundraiser that they had for the Sam Doyle Memorial Fundraiser at the Ōtaki Golf Course, where they raise funds for, in Sam's memory, for the Cancer Society. And we actually could see far, far, far in the distance of some kites up in the sky. That's how high they were from the golf course. And then people were turning up later because they'd been at the Pulse Netball. And it was, and there was some other event too, like a rugby or something event. And it was just like, spoilt for choice was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful weather.
Absolutely beautiful. And unless you see them, just the scale of those kites is just, it blows your mind.
And they're fun.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's really amazing.
And so they call themselves pilots.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, that's the official term. Look that up. Yeah, it's a kite pilot because they're flying kites, I guess.
Kites. Nobody wants to be a kite flyer because that sounds like you don't deliver. So.
They're flying kites. They're a pilot.
They're a pilot.
It's just appropriate.
Yeah. So, you know what kites don't have? Fuel. They don't need fuel.
That's right.
Other kind of pilots need fuel. See what I'm doing here?
Nice segue.
Yep. I'm going to the fuel crisis. So how does that affect the Kapiti Coast District Council? And what are you seeing as mayor of this district? What are your kind of issues and concerns about this?
So there's the concerns that we have as an organisation. Then there's the concerns that we have for our community. And I'll start with that because that's the most important thing really is our community. And really just very concerning to have this situation happening when the cost of living was already difficult for people. So top of mind is how we're going to support our community through the weeks and hopefully only weeks and months ahead. Just really unfortunate that this situation is happening. We're also staying on top of what the government are doing in terms of controlling the use of diesel and petrol. I went on a Zoom call just before the announcements around that with the local government sector. We had an opportunity to ask questions. So there are, you know, people will have heard by now that there are various phases that we move through and then various prioritisation of fuel use within those last phases so that life-giving fuel is, life-saving or life-critical fuel is used first and then various categories under that, and the government's currently consulting on that. So, yeah, it's going to be challenging times ahead. In terms of the organisation, we have some fixed contracts which are being delivered at the moment, but then there are some contracts which are about to start and it could affect the price of some of the work that we need to do. There's also the cost of operating our machinery and our fleet. Pretty glad that we've got it almost fully electric fleet, which means that, that the impact on some of that is less than what it might be. And then there's just the increased costs for council in general. So we're looking at that as time goes on and as our monthly forecasts come in, we're going to know more about the impact of that. But in the meantime, we're still plugging away, preparing our annual plan and hoping that we can roll it out pretty much as it is. But we may need to make some adjustments there as well.
So I think, you know, a lot of us probably might not put together all the different ways that a council does its business needing fuel. So whether it's the lawn mowing of the sports fields, the contracts that you have with the rubbish trucks, spraying of things, just...
Yeah. What I have noticed is that some of the measures that we've taken to reduce our emissions have meant moving away from diesel. So, for instance, we have a wood chip burner at the wastewater treatment plant. We don't use diesel for that anymore. Things like that. We have solar power at our pools, which means that we're not using diesel generators so much. A lot of those environmental measures that we've taken have actually given us a level of resistance to fuel supply challenges. Mm. So it's interesting to reflect on that as well and really encourage us to do more of that.
And I think, you know, probably during those processes, it's not necessarily focused so much on what is now that kind of the secondary kind of like, oh, the benefit, like, you know, because who would have guessed what we've been dealing with is what we're dealing with? No.
It's been a shock. I think we're all in a bit of shock, actually.
So that fuel crisis, so it's well in hand, and there's a forum where the mayors get briefings if, you know, so you've had that process. And
so that briefing was open to all elected members, I believe. So Local Government New Zealand is our membership organisation, and all elected members have the opportunity to attend some of those meetings. I think there were hundreds of people online, actually, for that Zoom meeting. So, yeah, it's down to community boards, we need to be up to speed with what's happening.
Excellent. So, again, I can segue nicely into, while you're talking about local government as a whole and the sector, is about the simplifying of local government, kind of work that's been undertaken there at the moment. And, you know, I would casually slip in the word amalgamations, but you're probably as mayor not thinking it's about that. It's about the bigger picture or a whole lot of different threads. Where are things at for us?
So we've been doing some work as a Wellington region with the mayors and the Wellington Regional Leadership Group to start the discussions around, Wellington are starting the discussions about where that region is headed. So, they've already got a water entity which covers Wellington, Porirua and the Hutt Valleys. So that's kind of the core group that are having the discussion. We're involved as observers on that group, and in the meantime, we ourselves are doing a whole lot of work around whether we would be viable as a unitary authority, what it would look like if we joined with our neighbours to the north, what would be the financial impacts if we joined a Wellington group, pretty much similar to what we did with water, so that we can make sure that we're in the best position to decide on the future of our district. But we've got to bear in mind with this particular one that it's a decision that will have decades of impact. The last time a major piece of work was done like this was in the 1980s. So you've got to try and kind of have a crystal ball a little bit or try and gaze into the future. What are we going to need further down the track? You know, so, and also we've got to bear in mind that we've got to be resilient with things like what's happening at the moment with the fuel crisis, with any kind of emergencies that happen, and also what's going to be most affordable for the community now and in the future. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we've started that work. We've got some dedicated staff working on it at the moment, and we'll be getting some information in the coming weeks and considering some possible steps and conversations we might want to have at our meeting at the beginning of May.
So I guess, yeah, people will always want to know, like, what is the kind of time frame we're talking about here, and what is the how soon or how far away? Is this in a hurry? Why did this come about? So, you know, you mentioned May. How long do you think we're going to be in this conversation for?
Well, Wellington's idea is to push it through faster than the government has kind of signalled it's going to require these conversations to be had. There's also there's also an election coming up that might have an impact on the timeframes. But the idea for Wellington is to get their work done in the next 2 or 3 years. So that, to some extent, will dictate what we need to do as a council too, just to make sure that we're keeping up if that's the option that we want to that we want to pursue.
To be in the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very big topics. and amongst all that, actually still trying to run the council. So in terms of running the council at the moment, I understand you have created some focus groups of councillors and the community. What's the story there?
Yeah, so we've got a few focus groups. We've got an engagement focus group, which is going to look at all of these groups involve 5 or 6 councillors. Anybody who's interested in these particular areas, I'm encouraging councillors to pick one so that they can really, spend a a good amount of time focusing on it.
Mm.
So there's an engagement focus group. Rob McCann is leading that, and we'll be looking at how we engage as elected members. We'll be starting to look at our early engagement for the long-term plan, how that ties in with our Vision Kapiti work, and how we can just really drill down and work out how we can communicate better with our community over the next few years. And we've got a finance working group. At the moment, the finance working group is having a look at our consultation document for the annual plan and making sure that that's all fit for release.
Who's leading that one?
Liz Coe will be leading that group.
Oh, yeah, Liz, yeah.
And so the idea is that people will, you know, they're leading groups which fit with their areas of expertise and interest. So Liz is leading that one, and that'll be looking at kind of digging into finances of council leading up to the long-term plan. Now, because of resources and time constraints, we didn't quite manage to do as deep a look at finances as we would have liked to ahead of the annual plan.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is through the long-term plan to consult with the community and engage with the community and also have a look ourselves into where we might be able to find areas of savings. Similar to work that Wellington City Council has been doing, and I had a good meeting with Ben McAnulty, the Deputy Mayor, who's been leading that work. And, you know, just what have they been doing? What can we replicate? Suits us? What might we want to how might we want to run that piece of work? So they're kicking off. The engagement group has already kicked off, and we'll be having a look at some of the engagement strategies and some of the ways that we've engaged in the past, and thinking what out of that do we think is really useful, and what other ways and channels that we might want to explore.
Hmm. And so it's almost like a little test pilot project here. And then next year, when it's the big one for everybody, the long-term plan consultation process, so you'll have it all pulled together and be ready.
Yes, yeah. So that's why we're pulling ourselves together now, even before we release the annual plan. The annual plan, we will have a consultation document. We'll have a chance for people to come in and talk to councillors about that. But what we're really focusing on is really drilling down ahead of the long-term plan to make sure that we find all the savings that we can and have the best plan that we can for the future.
So with the upcoming annual plan, is there anything you can kind of foreshadow there that people might see in terms of ways you're trying to save some money, regroup on things?
So we've been through all the activity areas of council and found some savings through the budgets, but nothing that triggers what's called our significant and engagement policy, because as soon as you make any major changes, then you need to consult with the community about those, and that's quite a cumbersome process. So what we decided to do was really focus on that early engagement and having meaningful conversation with the community ahead of the long-term plan to find those savings.
Great, thank you. And so I'm also thinking about Paikokoriki School. They've recently celebrated 140 years.
Yeah, 140 years. So the school used to be kind of around where Emerald Glen is. The building's still there. It's a house now. It was a really small school. And children used to ride on horses to get there, if you can imagine.
That's
how long ago it was. There's actually a picture that I saw one time. I think it sits in the Turnbull Library. And it's a horse with about four or five children on it, ready to the horse would just ride them to school. I just think that's just
Is that the original walking school bus?
I think so. Yeah. Slightly different to the ones we have today. But it was really wonderful to visit the school and see how the students there have really embraced it and really, really explored what life was like back then. It's a real opportunity to bring history alive when it's your school.
Yeah.
You know, and I talked to them about, you know, people your age who I think they worked out were there the same age as their great, great, great grandparents would have been.
Wow. How gorgeous.
So I think I've got that right. Yeah, I tried to multiply the 25 years. But yeah, it's and they dug up some old stories too, and a few scandals that happened back in those days.
But we won't share those. But if people want to,
so yeah, it's just such a wonderful opportunity for learning and you know, looking what is it, walking backwards into the future.
Yeah.
So looking at what's happened before as you...
Well, because there's always a lot of talk about, you know, the current education system and, oh, its failings and, oh, will this testing carry on and stuff. But to actually, you know, reflect about how we have come, how far we have come from in those days, 140 years ago or 130 or 120, just, you know, what a schooling environment was like. They still managed to learn the written, you know, the written languages and
the reading, writing, math.
Yeah, maths hasn't changed much. You know, one plus one equals two.
That wider perspective on life and the world and history and your local area too is just so valuable.
Mm. Wonderful. So what sort of things have they done to celebrate the 140 years?
Well, they've done displays, they put on a show, a puppet show, you know, just really bringing it to life. Which was really cool.
Oh, actually, I remember when I was at primary school, a gazillion years ago, in St Helier's in primary school in Auckland, we had a big, maybe it was a 75-year thing, and we did a whole lot of, like, wartime things and dressing up and songs of the wartime era. It was really good fun. It was, like, a big moment of time in our kind of primary school years when you do that kind of celebration about your school and set, you know, thinking about the setting of it in its foundation years.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So,
And also it makes you kind of realise how historic Pai Kakariki is in particular as an area. I mean, it existed before some of the rest of the district, Ōtaki as well.
Yeah.
Those areas just have such a rich history. And for Pai Kakariki, you know, I talked to the students about how when the house that my sister lives in was built, it was built to be a guest house because people used to get on a stagecoach, horse and cart, basically, big horse and cart, and they'd come over the hill road and it would take them all day to get from Wellington to Pai Kakariki.
Yeah.
And then they would get on the train the next day because the train tracks, the tunnels hadn't been finished from Pukerua Bay to Pai Kakariki. It was the last piece of the main trunk line to be finished. So people would come on the stagecoach, they'd stay overnight at the guest house, or I think there was another guest house in Pai Kakariki as well, and then they'd hop on the train, the steam train, and they would carry on.
And how far did the train track go?
Well, for quite a long time, it would go all the way to Auckland.
And so that was the one piece that was missing?
The missing link, because it took a long time to finish those tunnels. Well, that's what Ken Shaw told me.
So gospel.
I haven't read that history. It's oral history from a long-time resident called Ken Shaw, who actually drove the last steam train from Pai Kakariki to Taumarunui.
So is that...
The last commercial steam train. Of course, they still run them on a recreational basis.
And is it those ones that are based at Pai Kakariki?
I don't know if they're the very same trains. I couldn't answer that question. Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
That's similar, though.
Yeah, cool. Oh, well, haven't we travelled over a lot of topics today? Anything you want to pick up on that I haven't asked about?
So we haven't talked about Māori Land.
Oh, right.
Which has also happened since we last spoke. And I just, a huge shout out to the organisers of Māori Land who've been running it for well over a decade now. Mm-hmm. So it's just such an incredible event and such an opportunity to find out about cultures. We talked about finding about history, but this is about finding out about Indigenous cultures from all over the world. And the program was just jam-packed with incredible films and events and talks and opportunity for learning and it's kind of perspective shifting. So, and also the whole town comes alive with how they set up things throughout the township. So it's just huge, huge thanks to them for what they do. And I know they're having challenges with funding at the moment, so look out for opportunities to sing their praises from the rooftops.
Excellent. Good call. Great. Oh, yes, no, they certainly are very dearly loved in our community in Ōtaki, and but as you say, sort of a global experience. You know, who would have thought? Who would have thought all those years ago when Libby had this like audacious idea?
Yes,
and here they are.
Yeah, I remember the first conversation I had with her about it, and she said, "I'm going to have an international Indigenous film festival in Ōtaki," and I thought, really? And then she did.
And again and again and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and truly internationally recognised too, you know. So absolutely wonderful.
Oh, well, very good shout out there. So, look, thank you so much for coming in and catching us up on all things as Mayor of the Kapiti Coast District, and much appreciated, and go well out there. So thank you very much to the listeners. And Janet.
Such a pleasure always, Penny. Yeah, thanks for having me in.
Great. And so, look, thanks everybody for listening in to another episode of Political Viewpoint. Take care out there and catch you next time.
Political Point of View was made with the assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.